Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, let's get after it. Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Thursday down, one to go. Get it? Because the grind does include Friday. Had a couple of excellent interviews today. Detroit Pistons forward Tobias Harris came in. He's always impressive. He did not disappoint. UFC heavyweight champ Stipe Miocic came in. He was huge as well. Conor's deal was done. Now it's up to Floyd to finally get this fight made. Giselle put her man on blast, and we went all in on that hospital job that the King and the Cavs put on the Celtics. Alvy, roll it. Let's start with the Eastern Conference Finals and LeBron and the Cavaliers. LeBron goes into the Celtics house, punks them again, just as he always has in that building. Nothing has changed. They've never had a way to slow him down or prevent him from getting to the rack against them, and come to find out, they still don't. Bad news for the Celtics. Head coach Brad Stevens says, not only is LeBron not slowing down at his advanced age, he's actually getting better, and he's doing pretty much whatever the hell he wants to whoever the hell they put in front of him. I mean, how hard is this guy laughing to himself every single time he sees Kelly Olynyk try to stay in front of him? How insulted do you think LeBron is every time they try to guard him with only one dude?
Here's LeBron at the right point, guarded here by Gerald Green. Five to shoot. LeBron unloads a three, and it's perfect. That's LeBron's first triple of the evening. He now has a game-high 37 points. Cavs 109, Celtics 88.
I mean, embarrassing, right? Cavs radio. How hard is this guy laughing every single time he sees either Olynyk or anybody else try and stand in front of him? How hard does he laugh when they try to guard him with one guy? But then again, you have almost no choice, because if you double him, he's going to make the right basketball play 10 out of 10 times. And then Kyrie or Kevin Love or even Tristan Thompson is going to kill you. LeBron was clowning these guys, mocking them, messing with them. They made the Celtics, a one seed, look like an eight. Remember when I said yesterday, I've got way too much respect for Isaiah Thomas, Brad Stevens, Danny Ainge, and the entire Celtics organization to sit here and say that the Cavs are going to sweep them. I would never say that. Never say that about the Celtics. I respect them way too much. Now, I will say they'll lose in five, but I would never, ever say a crew that tough with that much heart could ever be swept. I would never disrespect that franchise like that. Yeah, well, I'm going to go ahead and disrespect that franchise like that, because it looks like the Cavs are going to sweep them. Because like LeBron said after that game, as bad as that beatdown was, the Cavs can still play even better, and they will. And one more thing. Now we know why they didn't kill themselves at the end of the season to get that one seed. Why getting rest and recovering was way more important than getting the home court. Because LeBron and the Cavs were rested, and it took them maybe 3 minutes to rip the home court back from the Celtics, who had to kill themselves to get it at the end of the year. And when LeBron is well rested and recovered and has the kind of energy he has right now, no one in the East has any chance of staying with this guy. So they did the right thing in doing everything they could to conserve their energy late in the season. Just as they're doing the right thing in abusing fools and not wasting any extra energy. The problem is, Golden State's doing the exact same thing. And from the looks of things, their series with San Antonio is going to be just as short as Cleveland's with Boston. Give us our trilogy. Tobias Harris is my guest. Tobias, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me back.
Always good to have you. All right, so you have a lot going on right now that I want to get into, but let me start by getting your thoughts on the playoffs. If you're the Celtics and you just battled your way through a seven-game series with the Wizards and then you get blown out in game one at home by a very well-rested Cavaliers team, what are you trying to tell yourself as you get ready for game two?
I would just say just to stay confident in the game and to know that, you know, it's a lot of basketball left to play. I mean, obviously, you know, you saw last night's game. They didn't play the best that they wanted to, but, I mean, the series isn't over. And you just got to keep on battling, keep fighting.
You know, the series is not over yet, but, and with all due respect to Boston, who's a one seed, and they've got heart, and they've got some grind, looking at them and looking at a well-rested Cavaliers team, I mean, do you think the Celtics are even going to win a game in this series?
You know, honestly, I think that I don't, because I just seeing by the way Cleveland's playing and how much energy they're playing with. I mean, everybody knows that they're well-rested, but at the same time, you know, it looks like their defense is picking up also. I mean, last night's game, the defense was everywhere. So they look really good on all aspects of the game. And, you know, they're playing some really good basketball right now.
Tobias Harris, my guest. You know, I had your cousin Channing Frye on the show last week. And when he's hitting from deep and Kevin Love is hitting from deep and Kyle Korver is hitting from deep, we know how dangerous they are. You and Channing were texting early in the playoffs last year, and he mentioned that, quote, we have another notch that we can ramp it up to. Does it feel like they found that level once again this year?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I remember that text. I remember him telling me that. And just seeing them now this year, I think, you know, in speaking with Channing, I spoke to him yesterday. It was his birthday. And, you know, it's basically all or nothing. That's how, you know, what I got from him, how he was explaining the whole process to me. And, you know, that's kind of what I guess they're playing like that too. Like it's just championship or nothing. So, you know, they do definitely have they're cranking up that notch and playing some great basketball.
Pistons forward Tobias Harris, my guest. One more thought about them. Now, you averaged 16-5 in four games against the Cavs. So what's the key to having success against them offensively?
I think you just got to pick your spots. I mean, they choose different guys to try to really shield off in some games. I thought last night they focused a lot of the defense on Isaiah Thomas. So you just have to pick your spots out there. And then I think the biggest thing versus Cavs is their team that plays very good defense, so you have to make the move all throughout the course of your offense. So, you know, all seconds on a shot clock have to be used with good movement and moving the basketball from side to side. You have to make them work.
Tobias Harris joining us. Listen, before you and I get caught up on what you have going on, how about a quick thought or two about the West? From a player's perspective, what is it that makes Golden State so tough? I mean, is it their offense? Is it their defense? Or is it something else altogether?
I think it's their offense. I mean, you look at the guys that they have and how well they shoot the ball on the court. You know, obviously Steph, but KD, Klay Thompson. You know, those guys can really shoot the ball well, but also get to the basket. And on top of that, I mean, at times they're playing Draymond at the five with KD at the four. So, you know, it's a lot of different mismatches. You have guys who are normally guarding bigger guys, guarding Kevin Durant coming off a pin down or you know, coming off a screen and roll. So there's a lot of different combinations that they put you in on the offensive end, on their offensive end. So it's tough really guarding those guys.
Tobias Harris, my guest. All right, so what did you make of Zaza Pachulia's closeout of Kawhi? I mean, is that a dirty play, or is it just something terrible when it happens, but it's not dirty?
Well, I would say that it's, you know, it's a play that I wouldn't want to happen to me, you know, as a player. So, but Zaza, you know, he's a great guy. He's not a dirty player. I mean, that's how I kind of look at it. But it was just a bad play. But you have to also understand is he's not really in positions like that to be closing out to guards and that are shooting threes. You know, he's a center. He's out there battling. You know, the furthest closeout he does probably is at the free throw line with some centers that can shoot free throws. But it was an unfortunate play, and you know, it stinks that Kawhi isn't playing. But it was a hard play. I mean, you know, it's not a good play. That's all I could put it as.
Tobias Harris, my guest. All right, so when the season's over, you take a few weeks off, you let your body recover, but you also went off the grid. You took a week off from your phone and television. So what's that experience like? And then what's it like when you get back to that phone and you see hundreds of missed messages?
Yeah, it was, you know, just getting away from the electronics, and getting off the cell phone and TV. It was good. I mean, it was kind of refreshing. The first day, you're like, you know, you're fiddling in your pocket trying to see where the phone is, but it makes you appreciate a lot of other things that you see around you. So it was kind of, it was different, but, you know, I would advise it to other people, too, that have, you know, a lot going on. And then, you know, when you get back to your phone, it's like, you know, I said it when I first got back to my phone, it's like I got a headache, you know, after receiving all the messages and trying to answer people back. So, you know, but just to do it was very relaxing and refreshing, and I thought it was well needed.
We should all do it. You got to get off the grid. That's what getting off the grid is. Clones, let me talk to you for a minute about Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com. We even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. There is no need to lease an expensive postage meter. I use Stamps.com because I love how easy it is. I love how convenient it is. I hate going to the post office. I no longer have to. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never, ever go to the post office again. Love those guys. Stamps.com. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. All right, so when you relax, obviously you keep a close eye on what you eat during the season. But when the season is over, at least for a short period of time, do you let yourself go a little bit? Do you have some cheat days? Or do you have to stay on the clean eating grind year-round?
Yeah, I stay on the clean eating grind. I mean, I don't, if I want a treat or something, I do it, but it'll be in a healthy way, you know? Like, I got these sweet potato brownies that I make that I like, you know, not everybody likes them, but I like them. I'm kind of like hooked on the healthy grind. I know what it does to my body. I know how I feel. Once I had like a cheat day where I got some cookies or whatever, some real cookies, and like I had like the worst headache after, my stomach was hurting. So, you know, it was basically telling my body like, this really isn't good for you, you know? So I just kind of stayed to the healthy lifestyle.
Tobias Harris joining us. I mentioned you won the league's Community Assist Award. Actually, I'll mention this part of it right now. You won the award for the month of October, but you are a finalist for the season-long award. And one of the things you've talked about is that you want to inspire the next generation. Growing up then, who were some of the people who inspired you most?
Well, really, my family, my dad, he inspired me. As a kid playing basketball, I always looked up to Michael Jordan. But also got the chance at a young age to meet like George Gervin, to be around him. He was a real good friend of my dad. So, seeing that those guys and seeing, how great they were at basketball. So that motivated me to be better and to want to be the best.
Iceman's so cool. Ice is still cool. You know, it's one thing to talk about wanting to give back and inspire the next generation when you're done playing. Well, you're doing this and you're just 24. So where does that motivation and that drive come from?
Yeah, I think it just comes from me, how I grew up, and understanding that, you know, especially in the world we live in now, we need more young leaders. So trying to instill that into the kids, trying to just, you know, let them know that they can do it. I know a lot of these kids go through hard times and a lot of times don't really have anybody to speak to them or to give them that motivation. So, you know, this is my duty to be that person and try to help out and try to see somebody be successful.
Let's talk about the fight. Conor McGregor says that he signed a, quote, record-breaking deal. You can see why Conor would want that fight, right? If Conor's grinding out, and I'm not exactly privy to what he makes per fight, but say Conor's making $2 to $3 million per fight, or better than that, Conor's still making more than anybody in the UFC, but he ain't making money. So if he takes his fight, it would stand to reason that he's going to make $75 million, maybe more than that. I know why Conor wants his fight, and he called it a record-breaking deal and said now it's on Floyd to sign his part of the contract. So the two questions, is the fight going to happen, and is the fight going to be any good if it does happen? Conor signing does not mean the fight's going to happen. It means it's a big step in the right direction, and that part of the deal is done. And even if it seemed like there were numerous times where that fight was dead in the water and everybody had moved on, there's still just too much money at stake for that fight not to happen. I think it probably will. I think they probably get Floyd to sign. And Floyd's not an easy guy to negotiate with. But again, too much money for everybody for it not to happen. So I think it probably will. A better than 50% shot that it happens. So if it does happen, is the fight going to be any good? Doubt it. And I'm not here to hate. I mean, I would love for that fight to be great. I love boxing. I love MMA. I'm fans of both those guys. I would love for that fight to kill. Doubt it. Now, the press conference will be incredible. The presser will be great. The fight, not so much. Again, I love Conor McGregor. He's one of my favorite athletes ever. Literally, one of my favorite athletes ever. I think the guy's unbelievable what he does. And I've never seen anybody with a rap like him. He's incredible. He's incredible, and he's got no chance of beating Floyd Mayweather. None. Not a puncher's chance, not a striker's chance, none. Floyd has never lost a fight. He's undefeated. He's arguably the best there ever was at what he does. You think that he's going to lose to a guy who's never once boxed professionally? Do you have any idea how long it takes to be qualified enough to get into a ring to get schooled by Floyd Mayweather? I mean, literally from day one. And you're going to ask Conor McGregor to all of a sudden just start boxing. Yeah, I know he can strike. I know he's got a little bit of a boxing background. He's never boxed professionally. He's got no chance. Just like Floyd would have no chance of lasting 15 seconds in Conor's world. This is nothing more than a very fat cash grab. There's the fat cash grab alarm. Something new to the program. Whenever there's a fat cash grab, I'm going to play that. For everybody. For Conor, for Floyd, for everybody. Conor has no chance of beating Floyd boxing. And Floyd has no chance of losing to Conor boxing. So again, why would Conor do that? Why would he risk reputation? Why would he risk it? Number one, Conor probably thinks he can win. And number two, even if he knows he can't win, he could just keep grinding out $2 and $3 million paydays, or he could take a shot at $75 million plus. How many fights, UFC fights, would Conor do the math? 40? Would he have to fight 30 or 40 times to make the kind of money that he could make in one night boxing Floyd? And if he had to fight 30 times, how long would that take him? 20 years? 15 years? Of course, Conor wants to fight this fight. I would too. And I know Floyd wants it, because he sees it as the easiest payday ever with no risk and no reward. I'm not disrespecting anybody in the process. It's just not pragmatic. It's not realistic. It's a way to get paid. That's what that is. Can you imagine, though, if Conor won? You imagine the junk that Conor talks already? Can you imagine what Conor would do if he landed that one shot? What if he could? What if he could close the distance and land that one heavy, heavy shot? Never mind that Floyd goes entire fights without getting hit. What if he could land the one shot, like the Jose Aldo shot?
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker! The king is back!
If he was saying things like that before, I mean, to me, it's almost worth it. Like, in my heart of hearts, I know he could never do it because it's just not feasible, but it's worth throwing down to see if it could happen, just to see what his reaction would be, what Conor would say, what he would do. So, yeah, I'm saying to you, it probably will happen. It probably will be terrible, and I will 100% pay for it. We are joined by Stipe Miocic. Stipe, it is great to have you on the program. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It is good to have you on. All right, so Junior Dos Santos was the last man to beat you back in December 2014. I had Dana White on the show last week. He said that he felt that your hands were faster now than ever before and that this fight would be different. So what was in your mind as you were heading into the cage on Saturday night?
Yeah, definitely was thinking not to go another five rounds with him. That wasn't pleasant last time.
Right.
But, I walked in there and do my job. You know, I felt confident. Great coaches. We had a great game plan walking in, and the game plan went perfectly planned, and walked out with a W.
You know, even better in the sense that you finished him off with that right hand, 222 into the first round. Afterwards, you said that that was a right hand or a shot that you'd been working on for about 10 weeks. So when you work on something like that and then you land it and you end the fight, how did that feel?
Oh, amazing. It means we're doing something right. I mean, it's why I have the best coaches in the world, man. Here's where I'm at. If it wasn't for them and their game planning and the things we do, I wouldn't be here today.
Now, listen, you never want to lose, obviously. But when you look at how far you've come as a fighter since that last fight with Dos Santos, in terms of your cardio, your technique, pretty much everything you do as a fighter, is there a part of you that appreciates the loss as something you could learn from and you went to school on?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you learn a lot more from a loss than you do from a win. And, that last loss to JDS actually helped me more than ever. It gave me the confidence that I needed. You know, it showed that I belong in the division, I can hang with anyone, and I can be the champ.
You are the champ. You're the heavyweight champ. And it would seem that it would be pretty easy for maybe that could go to your head. You could get a big ego, but you really haven't changed at all. You haven't let the spotlight change you. How have you been able to maintain that?
I just have good people around me. My wife's amazing. My family, my friends, my coaches, my teammates, and my coworkers at the fire station. They keep me grounded. I love where I'm at, and the people support me.
Heavyweight champion of the world, Stipe Miocic, joining us. You mentioned the fire station. As some people know, you're also a firefighter. So when you show up to work as the UFC heavyweight champ. What do the other guys in the station make of that, and then how do they treat you?
Well, I usually walk in and say congratulations, and they'll hand me like a scrubber and say get to the toilets or something like that. They really don't care.
They hand you the scrubber and say get to the toilets. Hey, listen, they don't care, and I know you respect that. And that's great. Listen, is there any part of you that wants to say, look, I worked really, really hard to get where I am right now. I'm going to enjoy it. I think I'm going to stop working as a firefighter and just live the life of a champ. You could do that, but you're not. How come?
I love what I do. You know, I've my whole life I've loved helping people, and I've been helped. And so we can give back. And plus, I worked so hard to get there, to become a firefighter, going to school, and, you know, paramedic and all that good stuff, and make my mom proud. You know, I show my mom that, you know, she raised a son that works hard.
I'm glad you brought that up, too, because I was going to ask you about your mom. After your win on Saturday, you gave a big shout-out to your mom. You wished her a happy Mother's Day, and as you've said, she worked her ass off to provide for you. So how much did you learn from your mom about work ethic and drive when you were growing up?
It was everything. You know, my mom, she doesn't stop. She actually makes me tired because she's nonstop. If she's not working, she's doing something in the yard. She's not doing something in the yard. She's doing something in the house. I mean, she's an animal. She's like just a machine that doesn't stop. And I literally tell her to sit down sometimes because she makes me tired.
So what does she think about, I mean, obviously she's proud as can be, but what does she think about the fight game? What does she think when she sees you in the cage?
She doesn't watch me at all. She's never watched me in the fight.
At all?
Live fight. She's watched it after, but never during. She usually has a long iced tea or two, get the nerves down, and then wait for the call. Because I call after every fight, no matter what, win, lose, or draw.
So would she rather you not fight at all, or does she just not want to watch it?
She doesn't want to watch it. She supports me. She loves me, and she understands that I love what I do. And you know, but she'll never watch her baby boy get hit.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think many mothers would. So now, to set the record straight on something, when the Cavaliers won their title last year, there was a lot of talk about how they brought the first championship to Cleveland since 1964. In fact, in October, I tweeted that the Cavs had won and that the Tribe beat Boston. But the truth of the matter is, you were the first. You won your title last May with the win over Fabricio Werdum. So how much credit are you going to take for turning or for breaking the curse and turning Cleveland into a winning city once again?
Listen, I'm not... worried about breaking the curse and people saying me did it or the Cavs did it. I don't really care about that. I'm just happy the city has something to be proud of. You know, something the city, we've been waiting for a championship for a long time. I'm just happy that they're happy to be proud of that. I won a title and the Cavs did well. And actually, my league hockey team also won a title. You know, and he did so well, almost, you know, game seven of the World Series. I mean, I'm just happy the city has something to be proud of. And we have, you know, we can show we're a title town now.
Yeah, and I figured you'd say as much, but it's a very proud town, and it's a town that's had more than a share of heartbreak. So when it comes to sports, what's it mean to you to represent Cleveland?
Everything. Cleveland's my life. I mean, I'm never going to leave here. It's just this is a different breed of people. That's what I love about it. You know, and I just, I mean, I'm going to game four, you know, for the Cavs game. I'm excited about that. You know, I get to hang out with MGK a little bit too. So, I mean, two Cleveland guys watching Cleveland, Cavaliers, you know, going to the finals would be great.
All right, before you go, the heavyweight division is a tough division. To win a belt, it's even tougher to hold on to that belt. But if you win your next fight, you'll be the first heavyweight in history with three title defenses. Is making history like that something you think about? Is it something that motivates you?
No, man, not at all. I love fighting. I love what I do. You know, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't love it. And you know, the minute I'm not having fun with this sport, you know, training wise and stuff, I'm out. I'm just going to live my life. But you know, I love what I do. It's fun and so much getting fun punch in the face, but just the fun training aspect and getting ready for a fight and just the unity that we have with our team and our teammates. And I love the respecting of it. And, you know, I don't really worry about the record or anything. I'm just going to go do my thing.
And finally, Stipe, I think that if you're the UFC heavyweight champion in the world, you're arguably the baddest man on the planet. But there's a story that you're also into ghost sighting reality shows. Is it true? Do you watch them for fun or do they scare you a little bit?
A little bit of both. I think when I watch them, you know, palms get sweaty a little bit. So I keep that, keep me on edge a little bit. But I love that stuff. Yeah, actually, we actually did that right at the Super Bowl. Watching the Super Bowl, we went to a place around here that was haunted. Didn't see anything, but it was still nerve-wracking.
Tell me so. What was it like? What were you concerned about? What were you afraid of?
You know, at first, you know, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I was afraid maybe ghosts were going to pop out or I was going to see something. Yeah, I don't know. But then we started hearing coyotes and I got real nervous and ran back in the car.
Dude, do ghosts exist? Do you believe in ghosts?
Oh, yeah, there's ghosts. Oh, yeah, I believe in ghosts, for sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what would you do if you ever saw one?
See what's up, I guess.
What's up,
I don't really know. I mean, it never happened to me, but, you know, I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, it don't bother me. I won't bother you.
We talked about Tom Brady. His wife, Giselle, goes on CBS this morning and is talking about Tom Brady and then just kind of rather casually lets fly that he suffered a concussion this past year. That's news to us. We didn't know that. The team didn't report that. And, of course, by rule, the team has to report something like that. We didn't know it. And not only did she say that, she stopped just short of saying it happens to the guy every year.
As a wife, I'm a little bit, you know, it's, as you know, it's not the most, like, let's say, an aggressive sport, right? Football, like, he had a concussion last year. I mean, he has concussions pretty much. I mean, we don't talk about, but he does have concussions. And he's, I don't really think it's a healthy thing for your body.
Keep in mind that she was on to talk about climate control. And they steer the conversation this way, and she says, look, and she's talking quickly, she's talking fast, and she says, he suffered a concussion, he suffers a concussion nearly every, we don't talk about that. You hear how that went?
Like, he had a concussion last year. I mean, he has concussions pretty much. I mean, we don't talk about it, but he does have concussions, and he's...
He has a concussion pretty much every, we don't talk about that. They probably do talk about that. Otherwise, how would she know that he had a concussion? If they don't talk about that, how does she know that he has a concussion every single year? So what does that mean? So why did she do that? I had a couple of shouts, a couple of Patriot fans actually text me and saying, man, I'm so upset. Why would she do that? Why would she do that to him? Why would she put him in that position? True story. And I answered it the same way to them that I did on the air. She obviously did it because she's concerned. She wants him to retire right now. He said as much. She did it because she wants to make sure that one day when he finally does retire, he remembers her name and their kids' names. She wants to make sure that when he goes to the store to load up on his avocado ice cream or his lampshades or whatever he buys, that he remembers how to get home, that he remembers his telephone number. She's concerned. She loves him. She's the wife. I get that. The question is, did the team know? Is it possible that this guy suffered a concussion and didn't tell a team? And they didn't know. And now that the league does know, what does the league do about it? I'm going to say probably not too much. Given that they were all over this guy for deflated footballs, and given how badly that went, I'm guessing the league probably does not come down that hard over something that his wife said. Romy, I would love to hear the hood weigh in on what Giselle said about Brady. I would just pour a glass of red wine, sit back, and listen to him wax poetically for hours on end on the depth of concussion symptoms, family psychology, and Brazilian infrastructure. Signed, Josh and Nola. And once this cat gets going, there's no stopping him. Check the hood.
Oh.
This,
you know,
is Bill Belichick.
Get 1,500 on their college boards. And
this is not somebody pretending to be Bill Belichick. This is Bill Belichick.
Some of the smartest young people in our country. And
I think he's still in the middle of that one answer coverage that I started yesterday.
When a guy goes,
he went on a 24-hour
kind of
rant, a 24-hour stream of consciousness.
You know,
there's no stopping this guy.
Mechanical engineer or an aeronautical engineer.
The same guy who generally will grunt,
you know, football
and huff and puff.
Guys that had trouble reading and writing, they just weren't.
Very
well educated.
This is the same
they
guy.
They knew how to play football, and they could see what the other team was doing Guys that had, you know, 1,500 on
look how eloquent this guy's gotten.
Had trouble seeing what two people were doing.
Like, this guy's the most charismatic, eloquent orator I've ever heard in my life. He's Winston Churchill all of a sudden.
That was a little bit of a frustration for him.
Before he'd grunt about
talking about how
InstaChat,
you know, these guys come in and get 1,500 on their college boards, and they're, you know,
honest Cincinnati.
Some of the smartest young people in our country. And
this is Bill Belichick sitting down for a podcast
and
rolling.
Kind of thing. So. It doesn't always translate, you know, a mechanical engineer or an aeronautical engineer.
Bill, you keep going. Let me read the NFL statement on Tom Brady. The NFL said, we have reviewed all reports relating to Tom Brady from the unaffiliated neurotrauma consultants and certified athletic trainer spotters who worked at Patriots home and away 2016 season games, as well as club injury reports that were sent to the league office. There are no records that indicate that Mr. Brady suffered a head injury or concussion or exhibited or complained of concussion symptoms. Lots of big words there. And I guess what they're trying to say is we have no evidence. We didn't see anything. We haven't heard anything to suggest that he had a concussion. That's just his wife showing up on TV to talk about climate control and saying that he did. And saying it really fast. They had to slow that down. So again, I don't think the NFL is going to do anything about that at all. Let's try John in Oakland. Good to have you, John. How are you?
Hey, John.
What's up, Rome?
What's up?
Hey, I'm just calling in to say, man, that everybody needs to stop with this Zaza and being dirty. I mean, the dude is not a dirty player. He's just a moron. He's clumsy. He's the same idiot that took Durant out for 3 months when he ran into his knee, you know, falling on the floor. He's always falling, bumbling, stumbling. So the dude is an equal opportunist, man. He wasn't trying to hurt Kawhi. You know, it's just that people need to know, if you're within 5 feet of him, there's a likelihood you may get hurt because the dude is just, I mean, you've ever watched him play. This is the first year with the Warriors. And every time he's on the court, I'm, like, nervous, hoping that he doesn't take out one of our own players. It's the reason why we only play him, like, 15 minutes a game. So, Spurs fans, quit talking about he's dirty and he tried to take out your player. If we wanted to take out your player, we would have sent Draymond to give him one of his kung fu chops. You know how he rolls. You know, so it's not even about trying to take your players out. We're not worried about you. You know, I mean, take ownership of the fact that you blew a 25-point lead. So that's all I got, Rome. Zaza sucks. I wish we could get rid of him, but it is what he is. Hopefully he doesn't play the rest of the series, and I'm out.
Nice job, John. Well done. He said the guy's not dirty. He's a moron. That makes four for you, Gino. What's going on?
Oh, man. Hey, first of all, just real quick, you're giving Giselle way too much credit, bro. She didn't drop that concussion bomb on her husband on purpose. She's just clumsy, Rome. You know what? I'm trying to defend the honor of the fourth donut here. So listen, this San Antonio versus Warriors hate has officially jumped the shark. I don't know if you read about this. This is 100% accurate. A group of fans / vendors in San Antonio are suing Zaza for negatively affecting the value of their purchase tickets. I cannot believe this is actually happening. They're asking for $73,000 in compensation. Now, while $73,000 does not sound like a lot of money, in San Antonio, that's like $5 million to somebody in San Francisco. You know, I'm not trying to say the San Antonio real estate market is bad, but I think with 73 grand, you could actually buy the Alamo. I'm not even kidding. So, you know what? The other day, I kind of glossed over it, but then it came back to my mind. There's this random Brit calling in with some urine smack. I mean, listen, Robert Plant, I don't know what your real name is, but what is it with you wankers in San Antonio and urine? First, Ozzy Osbourne shows up, starts scattering urine on the Alamo, and now this governor is, like, talking about the urine and the Riverwalk. Listen up here, governor. Oh, hold on a second, Ron. You know what? In fact, I'm gonna tweet about this real quick. Here we go. You better hope that there are no tapes of that conversation before you start leaking on the Riverwalk. All right, Sam. Yeah, that looks good. What could go wrong? So, listen, it sounds like McGregor versus Money May is close to happening. Man, that sounds great. But listen, Mayweather, seriously, look out, bro. I got your best interest here. McGregor's clumsy, man. He might close out on you. And I know he's not trying to do it, but, you know, he might find himself out of position and, unfortunately, like, put you in an arm bar, you know, because he's clumsy. Not on purpose, of course. But, you know, he might stumble forward into a spinning elbow or accidentally get up on the ropes and then hit you with a flying power bomb. Not intentionally. You know, he's just clumsy. I get it. And Celtics, how horrible are your chances of beating LeBron after last night? That looked terrible. But don't worry, bros. I got your fix. Just trade that number one pick you landed for Zaza, and you're just one clumsy play away from being right back in it. See you in San Antonio, Warriors. Not dead. Can't quit.
Gino. Hey, Gino, that fourth donut, that fourth clumsy donut that you're trying to smash, it doesn't taste very good, does it?
Donuts.
Thank you very much for checking in. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. Hit subscribe. Tell your friend. Trust the podcast. Check back tomorrow. We'll have more Daily Jungle then. We're out.